commemorating Earth Day 2018 with a focus on science. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, this Sunday is Earth Day. We're going to spend most of the hour here on the show looking at how we all on the First Coast can be better stewards of the environment and promote science education, too. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's called Elevate Northeast Florida, and you can be part of it when it comes to planning for future growth in this area. Plus, Carrie Speckman will be along with some ideas for your weekend, and stay tuned for a great ticket giveaway. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Earth Day 2018 is coming up Sunday as people worldwide mark the event in a number of ways, including making a pledge to reduce the amount of plastic pollution they generate. Now, last year, hundreds of people gathered here in this area at the Jacksonville Landing and around the world for Earth Day, and they also took part in the March for Science to highlight the need for more science education. This year, local science advocates are holding a series of science-related events. It's called Science on Tap, and the goal is to create a deeper conversation about science that's relevant to our First Coast. This morning, we are going to talk about everything happening on Earth Day this weekend, locally and worldwide, with a special focus on science, as we welcome Eddie Whistler. He's director of the Brian Gooding Planetarium and School Programs at MOSH, the city's Museum of Science and History.
Hello.
Good morning. Josh Gellers is here. He's assistant professor with the Department of Political Science and Public Administration at UNF, and his new book is called The Global Emergence of Constitutional Environmental Rights. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
Excuse me. And here's our question to callers. What are you doing to mark Earth Day? What are you doing to mark Earth Day? And what are your questions about Science on Tap here in Jacksonville? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And you can weigh in on Facebook as well. Eddie, let's begin with you. Earth Day is coming up Sunday. The MOSH is one of many cultural institutions that will be marking the occasion. Let's begin there. What's happening at the MOSH this weekend?
Well, at MOSH this weekend, one of the things that we're going to be doing, it doesn't take place on Sunday, but in the planetarium on Friday night, we have a series of different planetarium programs that we're doing every other month. It's on a regular basis, and that's called Planetarium Night Live. And one of the things that I put together was a special evening in the planetarium with a program called It Ain't Easy Being Green.
That's nice.
So talking about our planet and it's special, maybe potentially not as special as we think, role as a harbor, as a place to harbor life in the universe. We just don't know. And we're going to take a look at all the possibilities out there in space.
That sounds interesting. And of course, Earth Day is Sunday, April 22nd. The day before that, Saturday, April 21st, you can come out to the Jacksonville Landing for a big free Earth Day celebration. That's the big local Earth Day observance, Josh Gellers. But there will be other things happening around the area and around the world. Earth Day is celebrated every April 22nd, and it has grown over the decades from a really small event when it started out in the 70s to a global movement focused on sustainability, becoming stewards of our planet Earth. It's really such an important date on the calendar now.
It is. And like you said, it began in the 1970s with some of the landmark legislation here in the United States, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the National Environmental Policy Act. And so it's really a recognition of the importance of taking care of the environment. And, you know, the United States has a long history, especially going back to the days of Teddy Roosevelt and the conservation movement that gave us this wonderful national park system. And ever since then, we've had such an increase in the scientific community in the United States, funded through the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, that provide us with important inputs for designing policy, but also for more generally understanding the world around us and human impact on the environment.
You know, this really began almost as a student movement. I didn't realize this, Eddie, but April 22nd was chosen as the date for Earth Day because it fell between spring break and final exams.
The so power.
So it was kids that started this, and people don't remember, younger people don't remember that when this began in the late 1960s, early 70s, rivers and lakes were literally catching on fire in this country. I'll never forget growing up in Ohio when Lake Erie actually, up in Cleveland, it actually caught fire due to the pollution in the water. Yeah. And so there was a real urgency to this when it began. But now the motives and the imperatives are a little different. We have a different series of environmental problems, in particular related to capturing and removing carbon from the atmosphere, reducing plastic pollution, and items on the agenda like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in order to have these long-term gains, you know, it's things like that, like overt pollution in a lot of different ecosystems and in different places around the United States that have been drawn back over the decade that show that people can do this kind of work when they put their mind to it. There's a whole different... How about this? One of the most important things that we can do moving forward with science and in educating the younger generation about science is we have to instill this idea that we are capable of changing our minds when given good reasons to. And when you have that as a layer, as a thought inside of your mind that you're not identifying with with a thought, you're capable of changing your mind for good reasons, then the whole world opens up to you. And so that's one of the things that I think of on a regular basis, because the best discoveries and the biggest changes have been made because we've been capable of changing our minds, sometimes kicking and screaming.
That's the scientific method.
In
a nutshell, you revise your thesis based on new evidence if it comes to light.
Follow the evidence
Follow
where
the
it
evidence.
Leads.
We're talking about Earth Day and science on the show this morning. It's 549-2937. How will you observe Earth Day? Would you consider taking a pledge, for example, to reduce the plastic pollution you generate? That causes a lot of damage. I need to do a better job with that. Okay, so Josh Gellers, last year, the March for Science in D.C., and there were marches around the world, were trying to send the message that science is a pillar of human freedom and prosperity. In the spirit of that event, you guys are starting a new series in Jacksonville this summer called Science on Tap. What's that all about?
So we decided, this is members of the science community who were integral in planning the March for Science last year, that we wanted to see the conversation move forward into a real action item. And so what we decided to do was create a series of conversations at the community level that instill the importance of science and science education to understand how science is a part of our daily lives, and also that science should be part of informing the policy process. And so we decided that it would be useful to have some big picture conversations together once a month at our partner Intuition Ale House downtown to talk about some of the important issues in science. And so a few of the topics that are going to be explored during that initial series include space, polling and statistics, nutrition, climate change, coding, and sort of urban sustainability. And we think that these issues are going to be really relevant for members of the Jacksonville community and hopefully inspire some great civil discourse and broaden the community's understanding of the importance of science in our daily lives.
Are you concerned, both of you, that there's been, I've seen it, a really dangerous trend of discounting scientific evidence, trying to discredit and downplay the validity of scientific evidence, people not wanting to listen to what scientists have to say, in particular when it comes to climate change?
In particular with climate change, something that I came into contact with on a regular basis teaching teaching biology as well in what seems like another life. been at the Mosh for a little while, but is also something that's been around for a long time. This isn't necessarily new. Maybe our acts... a lot of it is new, but the kind of roots to this have been around for a little while. Teaching evolution brings you face to face with this idea. It's one of the strongest understandings that we have about how the world works. And, you know, that's still a difficult topic 150 years after being proposed, and having mutually buttressing lines of inquiry, being able to hold up what is probably one of the best ideas that has ever been brought forth. And so it's climate change, it's this, and, you know, lately even I've had questions in the planetarium. In good spirit and in open minds of the people who are asking, but this is more than once, about the shape of the Earth. And so,
what do they ask you about the shape of the Earth?
Well, it is about whether it is a sphere or whether this is not a sphere.
What? What? Flat, literally flat?
Disc shaped.
Get out of here.
Object.
And what do you say to the Flat Earth Society of folks that say that to you?
Well, I don't want to give too much into the weeds about flat Earth, but these were genuine questions where I think most of the majority of the stuff online is really more trolling than anything else. But all the same, I start with a question of why are all the other things out there spherical and ours? That's a good first lead-in question. There's about 1,000 others that you can go from there.
The fact that you're being asked that question at all and asked it seriously to me shows just how poorly educated in terms of science and the universe, so many people are. Josh Gellers, you're a professor. You are really involved in trying to enlighten people. Your book is called The Global Emergence of Constitutional Environmental Rights. What are environmental rights?
Environmental rights are guarantees that people have to a certain quality of environment, and they've been around since the early 1970s. It's not surprising that that kind of dovetails with the advent of important environmental legislation here in the United States. In fact, there was an effort, I think it was during the discussion about the Clean Water Act, if I'm not mistaken, or it was the Clean Air Act, to actually insert environmental rights into the legislation, which it ultimately failed. But it's basically a recognition from a human rights perspective that people, and even a broader discussion about other non-human entities, should have a right to an environment of a certain level of quality. And it's also expanded into democratic, what are called procedural environmental rights, which pertain to our ability to participate, to gain information, and also to have access to justice when there are environmental concerns. And so they're present in over, depending on who you ask, you know, over 80 countries throughout the world. There's an effort afoot right now being spearheaded by the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and the Environment to have a treaty or at least some kind of international pronunciation of this idea. But it's gained a lot of traction since its beginnings in the 1970s, and I think we're only going to continue to see it grow.
What are your thoughts about the U.S. withdrawing from the Paris Climate Agreement? Your thoughts and questions about Earth Day 2018. It's Sunday. Give us a call here on the show at 549-2937. Of course, the Paris Agreement from 2015 aims to strengthen global response to climate change, to the threat of climate change, by keeping a global temperature in this century below 2 degrees Celsius. And it also seeks to strengthen countries around the world's abilities to cope with climate change impacts like worsening storms, sea level rise, and other health threats that are anticipated. So is the U.S. violating the rights of its citizens, its environmental rights, by pulling out of the Paris Agreement?
So this is a really interesting question because there's active litigation right now, oftentimes being spearheaded by children who are the...
Kids in Florida suing Governor Scott right now over this. Group of kids.
We've seen this in several U.S. states, and it's an effort on behalf of literally the future generations of our country to make a statement about what they want their future to look like. And so the United States has formally engaged in the beginnings of withdrawing from the Paris Climate Agreement. But interestingly, the U.S. can't actually withdraw until the day after the 2020 presidential election. That's 4 years from the date that we signaled our intent to withdraw. So at the moment, it's still in the process of removing ourselves. But as you know, the largest polluter in the world, what the United States does has a tremendous impact on the state of the environment and the climate.
I went to a conference yesterday of public works officials, and there was an environmental presentation, Eddie. And as the presenter talked about the need to turn off the carbon to mitigate these really dystopian effects that are expected to grow out of climate change, one of the guys in the audience said, well, what about China? China is a major polluter, and they're polluting the world as well. And the presenter answered, well, yes, they have a pollution problem, but they're investing a lot more heavily in wind and solar than we are here in the U.S., mainly because they're not a democracy. Hmm. And they can turn on a dime and change policy overnight, which is not something that you see in this country for very good reasons, of course. But what about that? When you talk about these scientific issues and climate change, and people point to other countries and their policies and what they're doing or not doing.
Well, I think that we have a major influence around the world. So that's something to take into consideration. And also, you know, if the science is pointing towards something and we strive to be a scientifically literate and beyond a scientific, a science loving, not in terms of the subject, but in terms of the method and in terms of being able to figure out how the world really works, we could change on the dime as well. Going back to that idea of following the evidence where it leads. If we were to act in that way as an informed society, then we would be able to do those same kinds of things. In some subject areas, I imagine we have a good track record in being able to do that. If we were to think about it for a little bit longer, we'd be able to identify some of those. But some of the most important ones have this political identification with them. And so there are camps and tribes that start to separate around these ideas. And that's the antithesis of how science should really go, that you're sticking with a team. So this idea of changing your mind for good reasons, following the evidence where it leads, if there is solid science that's leading towards something, then your society as well will be able to turn on a dime for the right reasons. And that's one of the things that gets me up every morning, going to the planetarium, showing how it is that science works, and having the luck to be able to utilize the subject that interests me most, and I think is a real good gateway scientific subject into the hearts and minds of people, and that is space and immensity and eternity.
We're getting tweets about Earth Day 2018. Here's one from Jimmy. Not to get too political, but we need to note that President Nixon was at the forefront of the environmental movement. That was, I think, as you said, Eddie, before this issue became so politicized. And people see environmental issues through their partisan lens.
I think it's interesting that if we were to take very non-related subjects, political subjects, and I knew how you stood on one or two of them, I could predict how you would feel about five or six others in completely different – they're just not related to each other. And so that's a sign that we're breaking out into camps and tribes, and that we're not dealing with issues, and we're not thinking about them
as a united country,
issue by issue.
Josh
exactly.
Gellers.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of interest academically on studying those who deny climate change, and I think two of the most interesting findings from those studies are, one, it's mostly related, like Eddie was saying, to one's political ideology, and interestingly enough, not education, not religion, not geography, but really what sort of aisle or part of the aisle do you fall on? And then secondly, there have been experimental studies that have shown that people are in favor of whatever the political leader from their particular party it wants to advance. And so if you have someone who is willing to take a stand from either side of the aisle and they say, this is, you know, climate change is real and this is what we should do about it, that's what's actually most important is the messenger, not necessarily the message. And so sometimes I've said this before, but, you know, I'm not actually the best person to be even delivering this message because people will view me, you know, skeptically just by virtue of my job title. But I think if we have political leaders on either side of the aisle who recognize the importance of addressing environmental issues, what they say, people will take cues from, and then they will also fall in line and agree with what their political leaders are saying is important to do.
Let's go to your calls now. Earth Day Sunday. How will you observe it? 549-2937. Andrew is in St. Augustine. Hey, Andrew, thanks for holding. Good morning. Go ahead.
Sure. I'd just like to remind us that it was President Johnson and Lady Bird Johnson, great environmental administration. And Johnson, in fact, included in his Great Society program attention to the environment. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And you're so right. The environmental legacy of the Johnsons and Lady Bird Johnson, people tend to forget that was a cause that she championed, particularly beautifying the country. You could drive on a freeway and large parts of this country today, Eddie Whistler, and see wildflowers growing along the medians. That was a tradition she actually started, among others.
It catches my eye for too long while I'm driving sometimes.
Thanks for that call. Yeah, she started the National Wildflower Center. I'm just looking that up. 549-2937. Lori is on the west side. Hi, Lori.
Hi there. I kind of wanted to say something a little bit different. To me, scientific evidence, by definition, is demonstrated by empirical evidence. And like many other stats, like racial crimes or sexual crimes, the empirical evidence has been historically skewed. And I would assert the same with climate science. And I'd like to close it with a quote from Robert B. Thompson's Almanac. And they've been studying climate science since 1792. And they say, "We believe that nothing in the universe happens haphazardly, that there is cause and effect patterns to all phenomenon. However, although neither we nor any other forecasters have yet gained sufficient insight into the mysteries of the universe to predict the weather with total accuracy, our results are almost always within 80%. And nobody denies, in my opinion, nobody denies the evidence of climate science. We just do not have the knowledge or the empirical evidence to do it for a very long term. So we have to handle it on a symptomatic basis."
Thanks for the call, Lori. Thank you. Josh Gellers?
So when I did a master's degree, and it was focused on climate change, climate science, and social science. And so I think what the caller's concerns address are one of the biggest issues that we did talk about during my program, and that is the temporal or time-related dimension of climate change. So the caller mentioned 1792, which if you think about it, that does sound like a long time ago, but the kinds of evidence that climate scientists use to demonstrate the evidence for climate change is on what's called decadal to millennial cycles. So we're talking tens of years to thousands of years. And so the instrumental record going back using things like ice cores, boreholes, corals, wood, all these different sources take us back 600,000 years. So the one clarification I just wanted to make was the fact that our instrumental record in terms of, you know, the things that we are using to measure the atmosphere only go back a couple hundred years.
Yeah.
But what we've been able to understand through carbon dating goes back 600,000 years. And so what we're doing is we're not looking at weather.
Weather isn't climate.
Right.
Yeah.
Weather is different than climate. But climate is a much longer term kind of phenomenon.
Rob in Murray Hill emails the show. "Last year, I went to D.C. for the March for Science. This year, we're celebrating Earth Day by writing our congressman and senators to support science, sustainability, and education, including the MOSH, where the budget has been cut. Here's what we do every day. We have an electric vehicle. We charge it with our solar panel. We use stainless steel straws instead of plastic. We volunteer to teach public and school groups on how cool science is. Rob, thanks for that. And here's another question from another listener. I've often been saddened to see smart and capable scientists talk about this, but it doesn't connect with the general population. How can we recruit scientists who have a knack for communicating these issues to the public? How about that?
Well, I think it goes back to what you were saying as well, that political leaders a lot of times are more likely to sway a group and a tribe and a camp. It sounds, you know, in a lot of ways.
Than a guy in a white lab coat.
A white lab coat or not, right? Just somebody who might be a field expert. A lot of times we're just human beings being human. And that goes a lot further in terms of like social and emotional than it does, you know, actually being able to take in data, analyze it, and come up with your conclusions in that kind of method.
Let's go to Jason in San Marco. Go ahead, Jason. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, everyone. Melissa, thanks for taking my call. I just want to make sure you know I am a sustainer at WJCT.
Thanks, Jason.
I want to urge everyone out there. Oh, yeah, you bet. I'm not just one who calls and uses this resource. I try to make a contribution that fits within my budget, and it's so easy because I signed up for it a couple years ago, and now I don't have to worry about it. I know I'm making a small contribution every month. I urge your listeners to do the same. If it's 10, 20 bucks, whatever they can afford on a monthly basis, it comes right out of my Bank of America account. I don't have to worry about it. So it's really the easiest way to
support. You want to come in and pitch on the air later today? You're pretty good at it.
No, I don't know. I'm going to be down at the Downtown Development Review Board pitching some other ideas.
Okay. Well, go ahead with your comment if you could.
Sure. You know, I play in the symphony. I work downtown. I watch a lot of WJCT, and I try and get my kids to watch it as much as possible. And right now there's a fantastic show on that it totally presents an overwhelming yet friendly the scientific consensus on the link between the burning of fossil fuels and the rising temperatures measured all over the globe. And if there's anyone who's in denial of it, then that's sad. That's hard to explain. And my political position is that if you're voting and you're voting for people who are in denial or trying to pretend that this issue is not real and you live in Florida, you really need to rethink who you're voting for. I'm not going to put out any candidates. I mean, everybody knows the track record of the people that are going to be running for the Senate and the governorship, and they need to think very carefully. Because Florida is one of the most at-risk states, if not the most at-risk state, if we don't take action. And that's one of the broad positions that's held in the TV thing on WJCT, is that we need to be taking action yesterday, the last 5 years, the last 8 years. And by not doing so, we've only dug ourselves a deeper hole. So thanks for letting me be a part of the show, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for all of that. One more call. Let's go to Mark in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I guess I'm going to kind of take the opposite side of your previous caller, and that is that I'm not a climate change denier, but I am a man-made climate change skeptic. Recently, just earlier this month, the National Science Foundation, part of our government, funded a study that UC Davis put out, and basically they came to the conclusion that there's a new source of global nitrogen, and that is that 26% of nitrogen is actually found in our rocks, in our sediment. And they go on to explain how they need to go back and recalculate numbers based on this discovery and how that natural nitrogen that's found in rocks can actually help sequester some of the CO2 in our atmosphere. So all that being said, individuals like me, I applaud folks who want to find out the why behind things. I don't fault anybody for that desire. However, when you make conclusions based on the data that you have at hand and are not willing to consider new sources of information, then much like the folks who criticize me as a man-made climate change denier, I can point the finger right back and say, well, how do you respond when you see new information that might be counter to the previous conclusions that you base your decisions on? And that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for making that point. What about his point?
First of all, thank you so much for raising that issue. I think it's important, and it illustrates the importance of science and the scientific process, because that finding from UC Davis, and I'm a product of the UC system as well, is something integral to understanding the total carbon budget in the atmosphere. And I think any scientist worth their metal and the degrees that they have would be wise to understand and include in their modeling the effect that this new finding about nitrogen in rocks may have on carbon sequestration in the atmosphere. So I mean, we might even have feel differently about this particular issue, but I think what the caller raised is actually a great sort of championing moment of the importance of science and how it can continue to inform our understanding of issues like climate change.
You'll be doing a discussion about this and a whole lot more when you launch Science on Tap, guys. This is going to start in August, Wednesday nights at Downtown Intuition Ale Works. Anything else people need to know?
Yeah, if you want to stay in contact with us and find out information about the new events that are going to be coming down the pike, we have two social media channels that are up and running. One is our Twitter account and the other is our Facebook account. And they both have the same moniker, which is at Science on Tap Jax, and that's with an X. And we also wanted to thank some of our partners who've worked really hard with us on this, setting this up and translating the March for Science into something practicable. And that is, we'd like to thank Jacksonville University, the UNF Environmental Center, Intuition Ale House, and of course, sitting across from me, the Museum of Science and History. So this is really a community-wide effort, and we look forward to people coming and attending.
All right. Well, thanks so much, guys. Josh Gellers, professor at UNF, Eddie Whistler at the Mosh. Good luck with it, and thanks for focusing on this Sunday's Earth Day with us here on the show today.
Absolutely. No problem.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead, but right now, we want you to give us a call and support WJCT. Here's how.
Pick up your phone and give us a ring here at WJCT 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Good morning. Hi there. I'm Kevin Mershart, a producer of First Coast Connect, and we are here to ask for your support for this show. It is Thursday, and this ends tomorrow, 6 o'clock. We are at about $22,500, but we still need to raise over $52,000 to reach our goal for this drive, and you can help make it happen. Become a sustainer, $10 a month at 353-9528. Tell you what, and you get to do that, and then don't forget, we have some great prizes coming up here for you. We have going to have a nice drawing of one person gets their name drawn out, and we have a whole bunch of stuff. It's also, it's $1,200 in value. The Jacksonville Symphony, Comedy Zone, Alhambra, Adventure Landing, Sweet Pete's Candy, a great package of stuff for you. Just as a thank you for showing your financial support for this station. So if you have not done so, now's the time to do so. We had just had a caller who couldn't explain it any better. You don't get it anywhere else. First Coast Connect is a show like none other on the First Coast. You get to call in. You talk to all sorts of different people. We bring you a wide variety of issues and topics to talk about. When there are big issues going on, like what's going on at JEA, we give you every angle that we can think of for you to discuss. And I've noticed that when I'm answering phone calls during that, the phones just light up when we talk about things like JEA, when we talk about downtown development, when we talk about the environment, when we talk about major issues around the area. We always get lots of calls. We get a wide variety of calls, and we get lots of people who, it seems, is so knowledgeable of what goes on around here. We have lots of guests come in. They get done. They talk to me and go, wow, these guys really know their stuff. I go, yeah, that we have a very active community here of listeners. All we ask you to do is do your part. Become a sustainer at $10 a month. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. And we thank you for showing support for this, your public radio station.
Thanks, Kevin. Well, right now we want to tell you about something called Elevate Northeast Florida. We all want to do that, right? But this is a regional economic development strategy, and it's focused on continuing this area's positive economic and job growth. Elevate also wants to increase our local presence as a more competitive player around the country and even around the world. We are taking a closer look at Elevate Northeast Florida now with Brian Teeple. He's CEO of the Northeast Florida Regional Council. Hey, Brian.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
And I found out about this when I got an email asking me to complete a survey about Elevate. So you're surveying people across a 7-county region about this. Anyone who's interested can do the survey. We'll explain how that works in a moment. But first, tell me a little bit about Elevate Northeast Florida. What's the goal?
Well, the goal is to take the current economic climate that we have and punch it up a notch. You know, we did this 5 years ago with Innovate Northeast Florida, and we were coming off the heels of the Great Recession. We really hadn't started to see a lot of economic growth, and the lens we looked through that time was really how to kickstart things. But we're looking at it completely different today. You know, we're near full employment, but we're going to take a real deep dive into particularly the workforce development strategy part of the study. Because there's a number of people throughout the region who are not engaged in the economy or marginally engaged in the economy, and we need to see what can be done to elevate them to the next rung of workforce.
And as you run the Northeast Florida Regional Council, a big part of what you do, I know, involves long-range planning for this area. Getting lower-income people to jobs and to nodes of economic growth is a big challenge. Isn't that part of the puzzle?
Yeah, and it's something we're looking at in this study as well. You know, right now, you know, we don't have a transit system within the region. We've got, you know, we've got JTA who does a good job in Duval County, and we've got smaller transit systems in the other counties, but they don't link and they don't connect. And we're working on that right now. On another study we're doing, trying to see how we can link those transit systems together so we can actually move people from where they live to where they can work.
And communities that have done that successfully, what type of impact has it had?
Well, communities that have done it successfully look different than Northeast Florida.
Yeah, right.
They're denser communities.
We're spread out.
And we're spread out. So it makes the transit option a little bit more difficult. That's why we continue to work with our local governments to try to get them to be less density phobic, to put higher densities in strategic places that really can support a transit alternative.
Why do you think governments are that, as you put it, density phobic? And let me ask you this, too, from another point of view, as we're spending today focusing on Earth Day, which is Sunday. New urbanism, that whole movement is focused on getting people closer into urban cores because it's kinder to the environment in addition to being good for the economy.
Yeah, that's important. You know, I have really great hope that the savior of density will be our elderly population, me coming along very soon to be included in that, because they need all the things that high density kinds of locations can provide, the new urbanism kind of thing, where they can walk while they're still able, where they can live in higher density so there is transit available. And those will become more and more demand as time goes by, as we continue to gray as a country.
And is the aversion to density just based on what? Well, it's a big change. Or is it more expensive? Or is it a combination of those?
I think it's historic. You know, we're still a pretty low density region. And I think historically, we've always looked at growth and development being greenfield, single family development. That's the kind of developers and builders that we really have in Northeast Florida. We don't have the ones who have been building in higher density places, even in Florida, like Miami and those sorts of places. So, you know, we're starting to see a little bit of it downtown, but we need a whole lot more of it.
We are starting to see some of it. Yeah, as you said, Brian, downtown, what they call workforce housing going up in the urban core, apartments and lofts that are, the rents are pretty affordable. That's something new for downtown Jacksonville.
And it's critical. We did a study a while back, developed an affordable housing needs plan, and we're about a 30,000 unit deficit in affordable housing throughout the region. And really going back to Elevate, we just came off a whole week of going out to our communities and listening. And we asked them, and this is an economic development study, when we asked them what their problems were, number one, affordable housing. Mm. And this is coming from economic developers because they recognize they can't continue to have good, positive economic development if they can't have their workers living in close proximity or even in the same county where their jobs are.
So as you conduct this Elevate study, if you get more of that data, what are you going to do with the findings? Once you complete the study, how will the findings be used?
You know, it will really be the blueprint of how we undertake economic development for the next 5 years. One thing I liked about our previous study, Innovate, is that we didn't just do a study and put it on a shelf. As a planner, sometimes I'm guilty of that. But we really did implementation, and we had implementation meetings for 3 years after that, and really benchmarked a number of the successes that we had undertaken. With regard to the transit piece, again, that's going to be tough. But, you know, part of it is, and, you know, you just talked about climate change in your earlier segment. You know, we began a conversation about sea level rise and climate change 3 or 4 years ago, probably one of the first public bodies to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, now people talk about it and people are doing things about it.
But when you started, I remember you telling me that when you would go around and talk about the need to plan for sea level rise in this area, you didn't even for a while feel comfortable saying the term climate change in front of some groups because there was resistance to discussing it. Not so much anymore, though?
No, we still we use the word climate change. Sea level rise is an effect of that. Some people it's more... It's easier for them to discuss sea level rise because places like St. Augustine, you know, here locally are experiencing those kinds of effects. But we've gotten over the shying away from climate change. You know, we don't enter into debate of how the climate is changing or why the climate is changing, but the fact that the climate is changing mm-hmm. and our local governments need to respond in some form or fashion.
And now is that part of this study? Are you going to be talking about that as you talk about economic development? Because the impacts from sea level rise, they're not going to be good for the economy.
Not going to be good for the economy. Although some people think that it might be good for the economy because as South Florida becomes more underwater, climate refugees may seek, you know, we have a phenomena of halfbacks going halfway home to the north. We may get some of that effect in the long run.
More people moving up here.
Right.
To hopefully a drier area. Well, what else should people know about Elevate Northeast Florida?
The part that we're really focused on that I think is going to be pretty phenomenal is not only looking at the transit piece and looking at the workforce piece, but really looking at what kinds of industries, what kind of businesses not only fit well today in Northeast Florida, but what are some of those disruptive technologies that are happening? What are some of those change agents that are happening? Mm-hmm. And how can we be prepared to take advantage of those into the future? And that's pretty exciting to me.
Now, you've been sending this survey out to, as I said, people across the 7-county region. Anyone that wants to take this survey from Baker, Clay, Duval, Flagler, Nassau, Putnam, or St. John's counties can do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's ElevateNEFL.com, ElevateNEFL.com. How much longer is it active, Brian?
Through close of business tomorrow.
Oh, we're right up against the deadline.
We are right up against the deadline.
We timed this perfectly, didn't
we?
You
are good. Right.
Well, I'm so glad to have you on the show because, of course, not everybody knows this who's out there listening, but the Northeast Florida Regional Council just happens to be right here in our building at WJCT. So you had such a long commute this morning, Brian, to walk across the hall and appear on the radio, which, you know, was super convenient to have you on today. So, again, thank you so much for being here and sharing this important project with us. It's important that people participate in the survey.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. Again, if you live in Baker, Clay, Duval, Flagler, Nassau, Putnam, or St. John's County, go online to ElevateNEFL.com and take this short survey because the information is going to be used to make this area more economically competitive, and we all want that. ElevateNEFL.com. A quick break, and in a moment, we'll speak with songwriting legend David Foster. He's coming to town, and some other ideas for your weekend, too, as the Spectator steps into the studio. Right here on First Coast Connect. Keep listening.
Community hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
New Horizons, offering IT programs designed to start your career in 3 months. Federal funding may be available. More information at newhorizons-jax.com or 564-9500.
What do you do when God tells you something risky and new? For Bishop Carlton Pearson, you speak that new thing out loud. even if it costs you everything. His story is the focus of Come Sunday, a new movie based on a feature from This American Life. Ira Glass joins us as the 1A Movie Club reviews Come Sunday, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, President Trump has used Twitter to insult his opponents, fire his Secretary of State, and fire up his base. But he has a director of social media, Dan Scavino, whose office is next to the president's. So what does Scavino do? We'll talk with Robert Draper about his New York Times Magazine article, The Man Behind the President's Tweets. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
The city of Detroit is working on a home swap program. You get a new home if you give up your own. Of course, it's more complicated than that.
It's difficult to get someone to pay out for something that they're then going to leave behind.
I'm Kai Rizdal, rehabilitating abandoned homes, next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, songwriting legend David Foster is coming to the Florida Theater next week with his Hitman Tour. It makes sense because Foster is the ultimate hitman. He has created hit songs and albums for everyone from Whitney Houston to Michael Bublé, Earth, Wind & Fire, Celine Dion, so many more. His TV specials, David Foster Hitman and The Hitman Returns, are the highest rated in PBS history. I spoke a little bit with Foster about the show coming to Jacksonville.
About 20 years ago, I started going to Asia, touring there, because they seem to love the people that make the music. And it kind of inspired me to try it in America. So here we are. The songs are kind of bulletproof, and they're mostly hits. So I think, and so far, people have really been enjoying them.
That's 16-time Grammy Award-winning songwriter and composer David Foster. The Hitman Tour comes to the Florida Theater next Tuesday night, April 24th. Get your tickets at Florida Theater. And finally, this hour, lots of great things happening across the area this weekend and next. Here to take us all around the town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Duval's own Carrie Speckman here today. Duval!
I got my new, this is called the Rally Cry shirt.
You've got a Rally Cry Jam, Duval shirt?
Jam Clothing Company. They're a local company. And nice. This is one of theirs. Duval's, this is a shrimp version. See, it's got a little shrimp.
It's a Jacksonville Jumbo shrimp version?
Yeah, it's in shrimp colors.
It says Duval. Very nice. Well, you are Mrs. Duval.
Ms. Duval.
All right. Ms. Duval, what's happening this weekend?
That is a great question. Let me pull up that.
I just so happened to have your list right here in front of me.
I was too busy trying to.
Saturday night, I'm going to imitate you now. Saturday night, it's Guns N' Roses' 20th anniversary at the arena, Melissa.
Is that what I sound like?
No, not really.
Well, that's just not very nice. Yes, it's the 20th anniversary. Of course, it's the JSO versus the fire.
Yep, police versus fire.
Fire rescue.
Fire and rescue.
It's boxing. And I don't know if they have females this year. They have had females in the past, but it's very exciting. I have been to it.
That's a fun night. So Guns N' Roses' 20th anniversary night, Saturday at the arena.
And they're doing a street festival. I think this is the first time that they've done that before.
Oh, really? So, yes. And the sports complex.
And that's free. Okay. Yes. Out
terrific.
In front of the arena.
Then Sunday at the Times Union Center, it is the Long Island Medium herself.
Teresa Caputo.
Her hair and her nails are sort of gravity defying. When I watch her on TV, I kind of want to listen to what she's saying in the psychic reading, but I'm distracted by her hair.
Well, I interviewed her on the phone and I was distracted by how much she talks.
Yeah, she's a good talker.
Oh my gosh. Like I didn't even have any questions. I had to end the conversation.
She out-talked you?
Yeah, I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
That's saying something.
Well, I know. But anyway, she's very excited. She's been here before. She's very excited. She will be making contact with the spirit,
the other side.
It.
That's right. Okay, ventriloquist and comedian Jeff Dunham coming to town Friday.
Friday, he will be at the arena.
And then Saturday, it's a Chorus Line at the TU Center. And then, of course, all weekend, it's Welcome to Rockville. Is that this weekend or next?
Next weekend.
All right, that's next weekend.
You got your Ozzy Osbourne, Foo Fighters, Avenged Sevenfold, Billy Idol.
Billy Idol's coming.
That's why I would
go. Get out of here.
I know. He's on Sunday, I believe.
Man, that's going to be a fun weekend.
Yes, Ozzy's Friday.
Okay.
Foo Fighters Sunday.
All right, and now Sunday. I want to quickly talk about Christina Bianco. Have you heard of her?
Oh, where you go way back.
She's this YouTube sensation. If you go on YouTube, you can look at her videos. She can imitate anybody. Mainly what she does is impersonate famous female singers. You've seen her on The Ellen Show, The Today Show. Well, the Jacksonville Children's Chorus is bringing Christina Bianco to town next April 28th over on the UNF campus. She's going to perform with the kids of the chorus. And here she is. Take a listen.
I always do my shows like half my voice, half impressions. I think the audience always appreciates the impressions a little more if they know me, if they get to know me a little bit. So for the kids, of course, there'll be lots of people they know. Idina Menzel, Ariana Grande, Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears, Adele. These contemporary artists that they hear on the radio.
And she impersonates them all so well. So right now we're so excited. We have a ticket giveaway. We have a pair of tickets to go see Women in Song featuring the Jacksonville Children's Chorus and Christina Bianco Saturday, April 28th at the Lazara Hall at UNF. If you want this pair of tickets, email us right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. The unimpeachable Kevin Mershart will pick a winner at random.
Unimpeachable. I wanted her to do an impression.
I know. She's so good. Oh, I should have included that.
Yeah,
sorry,
you should have. Way to go.
Sorry, Speckman. Also on Saturday, come on out to a free hygiene kit drive at the Main Street Park at the corner of Main and Monroe. Bring any kind of hygiene items you can to help the less fortunate. That is Saturday all day at the Main Street Park. Quick mention of that.
Yes.
And go to thespectator.com for more.
And don't forget, She Is Fierce next week.
Wednesday. She Is Fierce is next Wednesday night.
Correct.
At the second floor in Five Points.
Correct.
Melanie Lawson of Channel
the
4
amazing
fame
and
will
fierce.
Be our speaker.
And you, of course,
I'll
also
be there.
Will be,
you'll be
featured.
There.
I'll be there.
Go to 904tix.com to get your tickets to that.
Yeah.
Thanks for pointing that out, Spectator.
Hey, well, that's what I do.
Do me a solid there. Go to thespectator.com for more event information. And you'll see Carrie somewhere around town this
like
weekend.
Like at Trivia tonight at European Street at 7 p.m.
Yep, she's there every...
San Marco.
Every San Marco night.
San Marco Thursday. I'm there every Thursday at San Marco.
Every Thursday night in San Marco.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. 1A is up next with a look at where to start with end-of-life preparations. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. Whatever you do this weekend, make it a great one. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.